It's been in this passage for a while. Very briefly, just to say that the main thing I've been pointing out to you, this is a book of preaching, and this is three sermons that Moses preached. I'm sure these things will kind of, remember that. And the commandments that we're reading here are different to the commandments that we read in Exodus, which is the kind of the writing down of the commandments on the tablet. This is the commandments being preached, and that's the difference. He's applying the law to the lives of the people before him. And I think that's important, isn't it, that we have the word. It's not just there. It's to be applied. We're to preach the word. We're also to hear the word preached as well. We're to be changed by the word. And he's taking the word at a very, very important point in the life of his people. And he's using the word, he's bringing the word to bear on their lives. You remember that these are a group of people who he's speaking to who are preparing for an almighty battle. So you've seen the King's Speech, perhaps some of you have seen the King's Speech, and the whole film is this build-up to this speech that he makes when he addresses the nation on the radio. And he's so unprepared for it as a person, isn't he, and the battle he goes through internally before he's able to speak to the whole nation. But for those of you who've seen it, as he brings that speech, as he just begins the words, does it make you kind of the hair on the back of your head stand up? It's so so poignant, so powerful, so pertinent, so real. And it had a dynamic effect on the morale of the people, didn't it? It changed the whole outlook. They realized what was involved. They realized what was to be done. They reminded what the values they stood for, why the battle had to be fought, why it needed to be won. And it gave them a real hope. It gave them a real hope. And what I'm saying is that in some regards, this is very similar to that. Here is Moses. For years and years, they've been in the wilderness. Now the threshold of the promised land is right before them. They're all assembled. There's a sense of readiness to go in. And he takes this moment to come and bring God's word to God's people to help them in to fulfill God's plans for their lives, that they can enter into the land. Let me just remind you of the outline of these commandments that he brings to bear upon them. He reminds them in the first commandment of this loving loyalty that God's people are called to, this loving loyalty towards God, this one God, and to serve one God, your God. He keeps emphasizing the your. This is a covenant with you. God's made a covenant with you. And having lovingly served him, then he talks about, in the second commandment, about idols, doesn't he? This temptation people have to kind of come to God through some other means, through a statue, or some people like to go through God through a kind of like a certain kind of music. Just come to God. That's what he wants God's people to do. Just come to God. You know, he's your God. You can come to him. You can pray. You can speak to God. You can hear what God is saying. He wants a personal relationship with his people. So this loving, loyal relationship, this attitude towards God, and this open, communicative relationship with his people. And the third commandment, which talks about the honor of his name, underlines that for as his people, you are his representatives. It's not an idol or a statue. It's you. You're the people that go out into the world. You're the people, when they see you, they may not know about God or know about your God, but they know you. And we're to be his representatives. We're to be his people. We are therefore to have a concern for his reputation, that his name should be honored in our lives and in the lives of other people around them. And then the fourth commandment talks about the Sabbath, doesn't it? You know, we could take on these responsibilities, as it were, and fail to rest, fail to be refreshed, fail to remain spiritually energized. If we're going to do this, if we're going to continue to walk loyally before our God, if we're going to keep this relationship fresh and open, if we're going to be his representatives, we need to spend some time with him. We need to know him. We need to enjoy his creation. We need to enjoy his word. We need to enjoy his presence. And it's out of this, on a regular basis, that we'll remain strong. If you want to be his, you need to be strengthened. And the day is a day of rest, to think about his salvation, to think about his creation, and just to enjoy God so that you can be all the things that we've just spoken about. And then fifthly, then there's the honouring of parents. And I think it's more, the application is wider as well. But that just loving submission to godly authority, where there's godly authority, respecting godly authority. If that authority is not contradicting God's will, then we should lovingly be ready to work together, to support one another, to be part of a body, not just individuals who serve God, but part of a cooperating and coordinating body, firstly in the family, and then more widely as part of God's people. So it's not individualistic. We're to be a refreshed people who work together, who care about the honor of his name, who have a personal relationship with him and love him and express that love in all of our lives. And then the sixth, seventh, and eighth commandment, and we're going to be looking at the ninth tonight, I pointed out to you, all run in together with this little word and connects them all together. That's not in the version in Exodus. He runs them all together into a sentence. And it's murder, isn't it? It's the first one. And adultery, and then theft, and then this we're looking at now, false witness. And in this commandment, there's this kind of underlying respect for life. Thou shalt not murder is implied a respect for life, your life and the life of the people around you. And there's a respect for relationships that's being expressed there. Your relationships are important, and so are the relationships of the people around you, to be respectful to these things. And thirdly, for property as well, that we have things that God has given us that belong to us. We should respect our property. We should respect the property of other people as well. All these things are there. And what we're looking at tonight, which he runs on from that, is this matter of reputation and the whole issue of false witness, the importance of integrity to respect people's reputation and your reputation as well. And by connecting it all through from thou shalt not murder, smoothly going straight through to not bearing false witness against one, he's implying the implication there is that lying about somebody else, doing somebody down, not giving them the honor that they might deserve, is in some way linked to that same spirit that drives a person to murder. There's a fundamental disdain for human life or another person's life there if you will not speak the truth concerning your neighbor, the importance of speaking the truth about your neighbor. So God is interested. We were talking a bit this morning about the way we speak about each other, the things we say about each other, and the things we say about ourselves, the way we regard ourselves, the way we regard other people. These things matter to God, and they have an effect on how the other people in the world will see God when they visit, view our lives. So that's the kind of the headlines, I think, of what the commandments we looked at were before. We're talking in this ninth commandment about truth, aren't we? About the importance of truth. I don't know if you remember the statement that Pontius Pilate, remember there was this conversation that took place. Jesus met Pontius Pilate. Pontius Pilate was the representative of the whole Roman Empire in that place. He was a very important man. And Jesus ended up meeting him. They met face to face. It's quite an extraordinary meeting, isn't it? And it's recorded for us in John's Gospel. And Jesus ends up talking to him about truth, about the importance of truth. And do you remember the answer that Pontius Pilate gave when Jesus starts to talk to him? He said, "What is truth?" That's such a postmodern 21st century statement, isn't it? What is truth? But Jesus says there is something called truth. He affirms there is something called truth. In fact, you'll remember about himself, he said, "I am the way, the life, and the truth." It's absolutely solid and objective. Truth exists and is real. But Pontius Pilate was not quite so convinced of that idea. Jesus is talking about that there is something called truth. There is the reality of God. There's the reality of who we are. The reality of where we stand in front of it, what the moral obligations upon each one of us. There's something called truth. But like Pontius Pilate, when we talk about truth today, people are going, "What is truth? It's all relative, isn't it?" And people will contest the very idea that there is something even called truth. False witness, the whole idea of bearing false witness, collapses if people think it's all, everything is a matter of opinion, that the whole of life is just a matter of opinion. Modern times, I'm sure there's nothing new about it. Phrases like economical with the truth. It's a classic, isn't it? Do you remember that one? Who's being economical with the truth? It just sort of, you know, that there's not absolutes. We're not dealing with absolutes. Spin. That's a classic, isn't it? Spin is telling you the facts, but I'm just telling you in such a way that you draw conclusions that are not actually related to the substance of what I've just said. It's meddling with the issue of idea of truth, isn't it? Burying bad news, that's another one that's been in the papers, isn't it? You know, this whole idea that I'm going to tell you the truth, but I'm going to tell you while you're listening to something else. So I'm going to put some loud music on, you're listening to that, and then I'll tell you the truth so you didn't actually hear it. I told you, but you just didn't hear it. Burying bad news. That isn't the spirit of this. Because a lot of what we're dealing with in the world is this kind of pragmatism. People do what works. They do what gets them by. They do what advances them and they feel is necessary. But we're talking about principles. We're talking about principles. Have you ever heard about the fat man test? Have you ever heard the fat man test? Does that ring a bell with anybody, the fat man test? The fat man test is one of these kind of moral dilemmas that people, if you go to do philosophy or something like that, university, they'll put out to you. And what they'll say is that you're standing on a bridge and there's a train track running underneath. You've heard it, have you? There's a train track running underneath and there's a large, and it's important to say, a fat man standing there looking over. And you can see there's a truck, a runaway truck that's going down the track, and there are five people working on the track. And you realize in that moment that if you push the fat man, he goes over the bridge, he lands on the track, and it will stop the truck, and the five people's lives will be saved, right? And so they put the question to them, to the philosophy students, and say, well, what's the right thing to do? What would you do? What would you do? Should we pause and let you think about that one for a minute? But this is about the whole thing about pragmatism and principles, about principles, right? You see, actually, you could say in one sense, there is kind of, it's a bit hard. It's supposed to be difficult, right? It's supposed to be difficult. Are you finding it difficult? You don't find it difficult. What would you do, Roy? You want to put your neck on the line? Well, unfortunately, in these kind of philosophical classes, you can't create a third option. It's a hypothetical situation. Okay. So you have this situation, and what's been really evaluated here, because actually this is a morally impossible thing to resolve, isn't it? I hope you find it difficult. If you don't find it difficult, what's being identified is that you're slightly pathological, right? You're slightly psychopathic, you know, because you have a lack of concern for the fact that somebody's going to get killed, and it's really dreadful. Whatever you do, something bad is going to happen. And that's really what is supposed to evoke in a person, is an emotional reaction based on a principle. For example, the truth is, the Bible says, thou shalt not kill. And most people who would say, I couldn't push the fat man, they say it because they have a foundation, a principle. It would be wrong to murder somebody. It would be wrong to kill somebody. Right? Because they've been guided by a principle. And actually what this test is used to evaluate how people's decisions are received by others in a popular environment. So people who say, I'd push the fat man, in the main, most people polled would say, I would not trust that person, right? Because that person is prepared to break a fundamental principle, even in the end to fulfill an end result. I couldn't, you know, that person is suspicious. I'm suspicious of that person. They're so clinical, the five versus the one, they do the math, well, that's the right thing to do, and they... no problem, kill the fat man, right? But that shouldn't be an easy decision to make, right? So the philosophy student who jumps up and says, well, it's obvious I'd, you know, do this. Everybody's got to go, well, I'm not sitting next to you. I don't want to share a room with you. And the other thing is, as soon as you put in the word fat man in there, that's the other thing, it makes it easier in people's heads to think, because you're not told. You know, the truth is, those five people out there could all be condemned criminals. They might be some of the most despicable people you've ever met. And the man who's standing next to you might be one of the most philanthropic, brilliant minds in the whole. You just don't know who these people are. All you've been told is this man is overweight. And in consequence of that, in some people's minds anyway, it suddenly demeans that person from being a man to being a man who perhaps can't control himself or is greedy or anything. It makes them easier. It makes it easier in their head to feel that they can push the fat man. Can you just, so what I'm saying is, why am I saying all of this? I don't, you know, go away and think about this in the fullness of your own time. But how just a word about somebody can affect people's judgments about them. Just put that word in there, and it affects people's judgments about that. It makes them easy. If you can demean somebody slightly, if you can affect their reputation in some way, shape, or cast a shadow upon a person's reputation, it, in that case, it could cost that man his life. Right? So I think this is the important thing. But when you're talking about bearing false testimony, it is really, really important to see people as God sees them and speak about them as God does and stay. Keep your the importance of integrity, how easy it is to have our judgments of other people swayed and viewed. Just a little word, a little shadow, a little innuendo, a little exaggeration, a little character. It's no accident, the word character assassination. It's linked here to murder, isn't it? The whole process going down from murder. You can assassinate somebody's personality. You can ruin their reputation. You can diminish their place in society. Sometimes just with a carefully phrased sentence, can't you? And this is happening all the time. It's happening all the time. Truth. The importance of truth. Sometimes you've got to stop and you've got to think, haven't you? Before you act or before you say something, because of judgments about people really, really matter. In this day and age, the big argument is not about, you know, principles, is about being yourself. The people said the Ten Commandments, if we could write the Ten Commandments afresh, somebody did an exercise of this, a modern Ten Commandments. Do you know what the top two modern Ten Commandments were? So this is not from the Bible. People were polled, you know, what things would you say had to be the Ten Commandments of the 21st century? Don't get caught. Yeah, you may well be right. Huh? Yeah, interesting. One of them was, so you don't hurt others, right? Do unto others was up there, but nobody would ascribe that to actually coming from the Bible or from God, okay? But do unto others and be yourself. Be yourself. Be true to yourself. That was the important thing. That's what really, really matters. It was right up there as the value. In other words, your opinion, your view, your judgment, being truthful to yourself, not to some abstract principle that exists outside of you, but your perception. That is the thing that you must, above all, try and preserve and be true to. And you could say there may be some value in that until you get a situation like this. So an interviewer goes out into an American university and asks the students on campus and says, this chap's standing there in front of the students, and he puts a microphone and said, I'm a woman. And asks the student there to respond to that statement. Yeah, I'm a woman. And the student goes, if you think so, that's fine by me. I'm 6'3", this little guy. I'm 6'3". Okay, if you think you're 6'3", fair play to you. If that's your opinion, if that's how you define yourself, if that's how you see yourself, right? Then this little white guy is saying, I'm black. And actually, it's interesting, at that point, you could see there was a little bit of discomfort going on because actually, in one sense, you felt that this person was beginning to transgress on other people's identities. For some reason, when he said it was woman, it didn't seem to put the hackles up. But can you see that at the moment, there's this sort of general thing. It's so subjective. If I say I'm a woman, if I say I'm a 6'8" black woman, right, and I want to live that out, well, if it's not hurting anybody, that's fine. Yes, can you see that that's going on? Well, what's the problem with that? He's not hurting anybody. But it's against the truth. And that's the problem. And it's hard to sometimes think philosophically, what is the problem with that? Because nobody's actually being hurt if you think. But there is a problem. Because, let's say it, it's a man who is about 5'5", and he was white. And that's their witness. That's as you know, in terms of testimony, if I stood up in court, I can say that's what he said he was, but I'll tell you what I saw. I've got to give my testimony. I've got to give my witness. That's the truth. And you've got to be able to have the confidence to say that. Because self-definition, we've all got our opinions, but it's quite important to know the difference between what your opinions and how you feel about something. We've all got that, that's fine, but that doesn't make it the truth, right? Feelings are not necessarily facts. They're real, but they're not necessarily facts. People might struggle with the truth. They might find the truth painful or difficult, but it's still the truth. I'm not saying we should treat people with a kind of like a harshness and, you know, confront people with the truth. Speaking the truth to one another in, it's important, isn't it, to be sympathetic and understanding, but it's still the truth. It's still the truth. You know, another example recently was the swarm of migrants. Do you remember that? Kind of got into some of the papers, swarm of migrants. The moment you say swarm of migrants, swarm is a word that, that usually describes insects on the move, doesn't it? And what do we normally do if there was a big invasion of insects? You'd squash them, wouldn't you? If I've got ants coming into my living room, I'd squash them. Get out and boil a kettle or something like that. It just allows, in that moment, you to do something or to hold a view or opinion. It skews a perspective, doesn't it? And migrants, maybe they are migrants. But what if they're not? As soon as you say, I'm just using as an example about how powerful words are, there's a big argument that we've got to call them refugees. How different is it when you're talking about somebody who's seeking refuge from war? How does that affect your heart if I say compared to swarm of migrants? We're talking about the same thing, but how you talk about it affects people's judgments. That's the point, isn't it? We do need to be careful how we speak, what we say. Because just as I've just said, just defining yourself, you can try and define yourself, but you can't escape the truth. Likewise, you can try and define other people. You can try and put people in there in categories that they may not even fit. You're a loser or something like that. You can put somebody in a box and affect other people's view. They may even affect their view of themselves if they trust what you're saying. But it doesn't make it the truth, does it? It doesn't make it the truth. And the truth really matters. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. The truth matters. Lies. The opposite of truth is lies. And there are so many lies. Where do they come from? Where do the lies? Who has begun this? Given birth? Who's the father of these lies? It's really dark. It's really dark. Truth. And lies are, you can't love and lie. It doesn't kind of, they don't meet, do they? They don't meet. There's a difference between, do you believe there's a difference between right and wrong? And good and bad and good and evil. These things exist, don't they? I'm not saying there aren't some things that are relative. There's, you know, but there are absolutes. Let's go back to John chapter 18, verse 37. There's Pilate. So you're a king, he says to Jesus. I'd love to have actually heard him say, I wish I could hear the exact tone of his voice. So you're a king. I suspect it's something slightly, you know, cynical, skeptical. That's the voice of today, isn't it? That voice you hear, that cynicism, skepticism, irony. You think you're a king. You say you're a, you know, it's all that stuff going on. And Jesus answers, you say that I am king. I don't know what you make of that statement. So you say, what you sort of, I don't know if those of you who've read it, what you think of that. But I think it's because all the attention that Pilate is giving him, and everybody, all the lies that everybody's telling about, people are just lying about Jesus, aren't they? They're not bearing false witness about Jesus, are they? They're not telling the world who he is. They're saying all sorts. He's got a devil. He said he'd do this. He'd tear down the temple. Saying all these things about, just subtly, most of the things they said about him sound similar to some of the things he said, but they've just a little bit of a twist, a little bit of an angle. And before you know it, he's there, standing there, facing the death penalty. False witness. And Why all this attention? Why all the lies about Jesus? Why the people? Why is the world? Why some whole religions actually make a fundamental statement, said, God has no son? Why would you want to institutionalize and settle such a hostile view of Jesus in the world if he's not important at all? I think the truth is this focus of, you know, if he got it, the devil is the father of lies. The reason he lies about Jesus so much is precisely because he knows exactly who this person is and his power. And that's why we have to speak up and speak loud and speak clear and not bear false testimony, because there's plenty about. There's plenty about. And then Jesus talks to him. You say that I'm a king. And then it is amazing. For this purpose I was born. Save me one. For this purpose I was born. And for the... Can you not rustle your... Sorry, Phil. This is going on... This is on the internet now. Stop your rustling your sweet papers, please. So hard, isn't it, not to rustle your sweet papers? You know, what is it? Everybody thinks that somehow, during a prayer meeting, sweet papers don't rustle. They don't make a noise, as if there's a silence. We can hear them. Okay, pass them around. For this purpose I was born. For this purpose I've come into the world. What did Jesus say? To bear witness to the truth. That's why I'm here. I've come to bear witness to the truth. And everyone who's of the truth listens to my voice. Do you love the truth? It hurts sometimes, but it's good, isn't it? It's good. The truth is good. And that's when Pilate said to him, what is truth? What a bailout. Isn't it? Isn't it just so disappointing? And all the moral relativism and all the stuff that people come up with, it sounds quite sophisticated and clever and canny, but it's disappointing. It leaves you feeling empty, doesn't it? It leaves you feeling, just tell me the truth. Just tell the truth. It's so precious to bear witness to the truth. And there is this argument between objective reality, Jesus saying, I'm bearing witness to the truth, and this subjective relativism, what is truth? There's a world at sea out there. There's a world at sea without anchor. You've got to be the dry land. You've got to be the dry land. Truth is not a matter of opinion, is it? It's not a matter of opinion. It's a reality. And the truth is sometimes people don't know what the truth is. And sometimes you don't know what the truth is. And when you don't know what the truth is, what should we do? What should we say? I don't know. It's okay, isn't it? Because that's the truth. Truth won't hurt us. The truth won't hurt us. Jesus is the truth. Now, I know I've kind of got a bit of a digression. Moses here, as he's preaching this message to these people, is not giving some metaphysical kind of discourse on truth or anything like that. That's not what he's doing. He's preparing God's people for God's kingdom. That's what he's doing. He's helping them to live the way that they need to live to glorify God. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. To him, he's preaching it. It's practical to the people that he's talking to. They need to live in the light of this statement. We see what happened to Jesus. You can see how important it is. How far wrong people can go if they forget this fundamental thing. This truth speaking come on from Mount Sinai, it helped them in the wilderness, and now as they go into the land, he's saying to them again, yes, you've been in the wilderness, and we needed to avoid bearing false testimony in the wilderness. Now we go into the land, we've still got to fail to bear a truthful witness about one another. And the importance of that is saying that in the different circumstances of life, this will always be true. It's something we're always going to have to do. So it still applies. It still applies today. I think it's lies just eat away, don't they? Don't they eat away at all the trust is so important. Everything we do is based on trust. And when there's lies and distortions, you become cynical, don't you? You can retreat. I don't know who to trust. You become confused. You become depressed. truth. Truth. Why do people lie? Why do people lie? I think personal ambition is really important. Everybody should have goals. There's things we want to do with our lives. That's all very good, isn't it? We want to succeed. I hope you all want to be successful in the things that God given goals that God has given you. But ambition also has its dangers, doesn't it? Ambition has its friends, if I can put it like this. Greed can easily just sort of slip in. And alongside greed, maybe envy. That here's somebody who's got something that I don't have and it just irks me. Or jealousy. Here's somebody you're not satisfied. And the danger is if those things come in with our ambitions, we can start to exaggerate a little bit or just misrepresent a little bit, just skew and distort things a bit, insinuate just a little bit, and to try and big yourself up. But have you seen, or is it just me, that sometimes the way that people try to elevate themselves is to put everybody else down? Just a little subtle twist. And the kind of this character assassination happens and you seem to be something. But it's not true. It's not true. Why? For football lovers, Argentina versus England. What happened? Diego Maradona. That goal. Do you remember the goal? The hand of God goal. You know, he touched the ball. The ball went in off his hand. And it had huge consequences. Right, the cameras caught it, the referee didn't. And okay, in one sense, it's within the rules of the game, the referee didn't see it, and all the rest of it, blah, 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 blah. But it still rankles. It still devalues the game, doesn't it? In some way, it sort of makes you feel it's cheapened everything. It's cheapened everything. You just don't feel like it. And if you were in court, or you were, how important is winning to you? We hear that all the time, don't we, about the importance of winning. Winning's what counts. Winning what matters. What happened? Do you remember taking part? Do you remember the old, how many of you grew up with, it's not the winning, it's the taking part? Do you remember that? And that's spoken of now as if it's one of the most lame things you've ever heard in all of your life. What do you mean taking part? It's about winning. Winning sometimes at all costs. Do what it takes. Do what it takes. And if it means a nudge or a push, well, we won. We won. It's really concerning. It's really concerning. Because people aren't happy. They're not settled. They're not comfortable with who they are. They're not comfortable with their situation. And they're just grasping. I'm coming to the end. But I am a person who uses the internet. Some of you, perhaps, are people who use the internet. And if you go on the internet, you are being bombarded. Stuff on the internet, some of it is absolute rubbish, right? It's lies and manipulations and half-truths. Badly researched, all sorts of false claims. One of my favorite quotes is, you can't trust everything you see on the internet. And then the person who said it was Abraham Lincoln. All right? That is a classic quote up there on the internet, right? That's what it's like out there. And it's important to get some truth. There is truth out there. There are people speaking the truth. There are important things. But discerning between the two is quite difficult. I'm going to give a name check to a fellow minister called Gervase Charmley. Gervase Charmley is working up in the Midlands. And he looks after a Christian bookshop during the daytime. And he spends a lot of time on the internet during the daytime spotting these false kind of statements that people make on the internet. And he just spends hours spotting them and just doing some research about the statement that's being made and getting behind it and just exposing the truth. Man, that guy's going to be busy for the whole of his life. And you know what? I tell you what, he is really good. He really is good at what he's doing. He photographs purporting to be one thing, whereas in fact they're from somewhere totally different at a different time. There was this amazing photograph, the Obamas. You know, they had this whole thing in Cuba. They went to Cuba. There's this photograph of all the Obamas wearing Che Guevara T-shirts. Okay? Che Guevara T-shirts. Man, it looked like they're walking down Cuba showing off their... It was all Photoshop.
But the person put it up there as an actual photograph and was inflaming people's views and opinions. People's views. This is false testimony. Please be careful on the internet. That's all I'm trying to say. And when you read something or when you see something on the news, on the internet, whatever your medium of source of information, check it out. Get the facts. Make sure it's true. Don't pass it on unless it's right. It affects people's lives. We're supposed to be ambassadors of truth. So it is important just to kind of be aware of all these sort of things. And God bless Gervais Charmley and those who are like him. And you say, well, okay, what about, that's fine about my friends, my neighbors, but what if your neighbor, what if you don't like your neighbor? What if the person next to you is hostile to you? What if they're your enemies? Can I say what I like about my enemies? Can I run them down? Can I undermine them? Can I speak things about them because I don't like them and I don't like what they stand for? Is that okay? Or are they still your neighbor? If you don't like them, say why. Find out why. Be truthful and honest about what they've done or what they're saying or what they're doing that is wrong. But don't make it up. The truth. Let's stick to the truth. Let's get a grip on the truth. It brings such dishonor and discredit on the gospel, doesn't it? If we just inflame stories and exaggerate stories and say things that are not based in reality. Check it out. And if we don't know, don't say anything. Don't say. Just say, I don't know. I don't know. There's nothing wrong. The Bible says that a fool, when he is silent, is considered to be wise. You may have no idea what everybody's talking about, but don't add to the confusion by saying something that is nonsense. Just don't say anything. It's fine. There was when we used to live in Wales, there had been a lot of milk bars. Do you know what milk bars? Anybody here been to a milk bar? One. So there was a big temperance movement in Wales. So consequently, they were, instead of pubs, people were starting milk bars. So you'd go along and have a milkshake. A really nice place to go and have a cup of tea and all the rest of it. And I was in this little town called Llanidloes, and there all the gossips of the town would congregate in the milk bar. And the local vicar went on holiday. I think I've told you some of this before. The local vicar went on holiday. And he sent a postcard back from his holiday saying that he'd caught a bit of a flu or a cold or something like that and was fine but was not feeling terribly well. Consequently, the message got back to somebody that the vicar wasn't very well. This message then went round the milk bar and round the various people at the milk bar. And when the vicar came back on holiday and walked in, somebody in the milk bar screamed. Why? They'd heard he was dead. That he died on holiday and was shocked to see him. It's not good, is it? Gossip. Gossip. Right? This is another reason. Like, gossip is a real problem. It's a real danger. Stuff gets distorted and exaggerated and misunderstood. It goes around and in the end it bears little or no resemblance to where you started out. It is not encouraging bearing truthful witness, is it? It's not encouraging it at all. So, in conclusion, what is your word? What is it to you? How important is your word to you? Your integrity, the things that you say. Would you like to think that the things you say when you say it, people will say, okay, I'll listen to that person because I know they don't say it unless they believe it's true and it's important and it's real. But as far as it is with them, they are honest. Right? That's a good thing. That's an important thing, isn't it? That people would trust your integrity. If you say something, it bears weight. I love that verse. It's in the first book of Samuel. In the days of Samuel, one of his words fell to the ground. Have you ever read that? Not one of his words fell to the ground. Because his words were counted as being so important and weighty and valuable that people never dismissed a single thing that he said. They were, oh, caught each bit. I want to catch that. I want to keep hold of that. I'll listen to that. You know, the truth is oftentimes we say that people are switched off. So precious to be a person of integrity whose word is faithful. It's a faithful word because we have got a message to preach to the world about Christ. The things we have to say to the world are extraordinary things. You know, extraordinary things. We're talking about a man walking on water. We're talking about a man raised from the dead. We're talking about the coming judgment. We're talking about things that, naturally speaking, unless they esteem us in some way, shape, or form, they will probably think we are, you know, a bit soft, right? Because they haven't seen a man raised from the dead. So it's important the kind of people we are, isn't it? Because we're talking about extraordinary things, and if they're to believe them from our testimony, the weight of our lives behind those words is going to count for an awful lot, isn't it? Whether they will listen. I know the Holy Spirit, but don't you think the Holy Spirit also works in and through us too? Don't want to be the boy who cried wolf. So, that's my third and final point. We need to get firm grip on the truth and be willing to speak it when time is called, because there is a judgment. There is a judgment. And so, and we have testimony to give that forms part of that judgment, how people will decide. And so, honesty, integrity. Look, you know what I'm saying. I've said it. It's over. Let's sing.